But then something really interesting with Embark is we said, look, this enzalutamide looks like a pretty good drug. Maybe we don't even need ADT anymore. Can we actually beat ADT while not castrating the patient?
Hallo, liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer. Ich begrüße Sie zu einer neuen Folge unserer Publikation des Monats. Und es ist mir eine ganz besondere Freude, heute wieder einen internationalen Gast hier zu haben, nämlich Stephen Friedland, der extra, man muss sagen, wirklich zu einem Meeting hier nach Hamburg gekommen ist, zur Winterakademie. Und ich wechsle jetzt ins Englische und begrüße Stephen Friedland. Hello, Stephen. It's so nice to have you here.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Stephen, we have chosen, I would say, one of the most popular and most important papers that came out in the last years, the EMBARK study, and it's such a great honor to have you here as the, I would say, the mastermind behind the study. And welcome to Hamburg. Welcome to this podcast.
Thank you.
And please, give us some ideas on the study and the characteristics and so forth.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. So EMBARK is an interesting study, and we know, across multiple disease states that enzalutamide improves outcome. And we see in ARCHES, for example, adding enzalutamide to ADT has significant survival advantage. So if that's true, and it is, then if we take another group of patients who are likely to have bad outcomes, die of their cancer, and we give them enzalutamide, we should be able to improve their outcomes too. And that was the basis of EMBARK. It's, can we take patients one step earlier than ARCHES, the metastatic hormone-sensitive space? And so to do this, we need to first identify a group of patients where their current outcomes are not good. If you identify a group that's already doing well, we're not going to make them do better no matter what we do. So we need to define a group that doesn't do well. And looking in the literature, that was clearly those who had had biochemical recurrence and a PSA doubling time less than 9 months.
Yeah, I think that is a very important point that you raise. And I think that the EMBARK study, you will go more in details, gives us a completely new option in various ways. And I think it was especially important to pick those patients who are really at risk of being harmed by the disease.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we've seen some now more recent studies where the standard of care is pretty good. We're not going to do better. And we know the standard of care of ADT alone, kind of intermittent ADT alone, is suboptimal for these patients. So the question is, can we improve upon that? And so that's what it was. You know, patients with PSA doubling time less than 9 months, PSA is greater than 1 post-surgery or nadir plus 2 post-radiation. So they had to be a little bit into their recurrent journey and no longer eligible for salvage radiation. If a patient could be salvaged with radiation, they should get that. And systemic therapy will always be there. And so that's what EMBARK really is focused on. How do we deliver systemic therapy? Not necessarily when to do it in their disease course. But these high-risk patients will get to a point where they'll need it at some point. And EMBARK asks how to do that. So it took these high-risk patients, randomized them, as we have in many other studies, ADT plus placebo or ADT plus enzalutamide, double-blind, placebo-controlled. So we included a third arm of enzalutamide monotherapy. Very interesting. First,
who came? I must say, I really think that's a brilliant idea. Who came up with that? Was it you, or how was it created? How were the clinical questions worked out?
Yeah, definitely was not me. I wish I could take credit for that. I mean, when I think about ADT monotherapy, I think Bertrand Tombaugh is kind of one of the leaders of that. Neil Shore has done some work. Matthew Smith has done some work. So I think there was, if we go back to pre enzalutamide. We had Casodex, bicalutamide, 150, the early prostate cancer studies, the EPC studies, you know, showed some efficacy of that. So I think the concept had been around for a while. It was just never been tested in a phase 3 trial before. Mm-hmm. So it certainly was not me.
Okay. Good. All right.
And then, you know, randomized 1-to-1-to-1. And then in keeping, another thing that I think is pretty exciting is in keeping with the kind of intermittent spirit of ADT in biochemical recurrence, patients are treated for 9 months. If they get a really good PSA response, less than 0.2, then treatment is stopped. And they stay off treatment until the PSA hits certain threshold measures, and then they would go back onto their originally assigned treatment. I think that's really important. We've seen some other studies where patients weren't protocol specified of when to go back on treatment or how to treat them, that did not see the benefits we saw in EMBARK. So I think that re-treatment with the same therapy, really important.
Very good. And I remember that when we met about 2 years ago when you were presenting the metastasis-free survival was the first endpoint. And now we picked this publication because you presented the overall survival, which I think is the most important endpoint that you can really reach. And maybe absolutely. You give us some numbers on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the primary outcome was metastasis or death, both bad outcomes. We want to avoid both in our patients. And overwhelmingly showed benefits, 58% reduction in the risk of metastasis or death with enzalutamide plus ADT, and a 37% reduction with enzalutamide by itself. So we actually beat ADT alone for the primary outcome, metastasis-free survival, many secondary outcomes as well. But like any cancer trial, the gold standard's overall survival. And, you know, you would think perhaps when going to such an early stage disease that there's such a long natural history, other causes of death, that, you know, that'd be a pretty high bar to try and reach in terms of overall survival in patients without even metastatic disease, or at least by conventional imaging, I should say, conventional imaging negative. And yet, despite that, we actually saw the greatest survival benefit ever seen in a global phase 3 prostate cancer trial. Amazingly, over a 40% reduction in the risk of death by adding enzalutamide to ADT. Really unprecedented survival advantage. Amazing.
And quality of life issues?
So quality of life was preserved as best we could measure. And, you know, there's certainly declines with ADT. They don't seem to be worse with ADT plus enzalutamide. And I think, you know, part of it is we probably don't have the best measures for patient-reported outcomes. We used industry standards, FACT-P, different measures that we used. I'm not sure it fully captures the patient experience, but to the degree that we could measure, which was pretty high response rates, patients completed the forms, we really didn't see any differences, with the exception of that enzalutamide monotherapy better preserves sexual activity, mm-hmm. which is really important for some of our patients.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing. And I mean, the data are so convincing now that for me, or I think not for me, I think for the urologic community, this is the standard of care. And I think you really, yeah, that was a milestone, I think, in treatment options that we have now. The question that I have to you is, so if we see that there's a survival benefit, then we see that the quality of life is the same when you add enzalutamide to ADT, where is the niche for patients where you think this monotherapy, you kind of answered the question already, describe those patients. Do you see them really, like patients who want to preserve their quality or their sexuality at the end of the day?
Yeah, no, I do think, and you said the kind of niche that we use. So in terms of monotherapy, again, we saw delays in metastasis-free survival. We did not see a significant survival advantage. The hazard ratio was 0.83, so 17% reduction, did not reach statistical significance. But, you know, we saw many secondary outcomes, delayed metastasis-free survival, time to next treatment, PFS to symptomatic skeletal events, many, many benefits. So I do think it is better than ADT efficacy-wise, not the same as combination, obviously. But again, that better preserves sexual activity. And, you know, if you think about it, just conceptually, if all we care about is efficacy and overall survival, we would never do active surveillance. There's no way oncologically active surveillance is better than treating the prostate. But it's the side effects of treatment that drive us to do active surveillance, and we do it all the time and we don't think twice about it. But the risk of death with active surveillance, there's going to be a, you know, if you did a million patients, there's a few that would have had curable cancers that progress that are no longer curable. It's very low. And I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but the concept that patients all the time will pick quality of life things over perhaps quantity of life when there's two good options. And, you know, it's interesting that we had 40% of the patients were still sexually active in EMBARK. Interestingly, 60% were interested in sex. So 20% interested, but not active. Median age of 70, all had had surgery or radiation, many had had both. But still, there is a group of people that are sexually active, and that's really important to them. And it's nice to have an option. Even if it's not the greatest cancer benefit, there still are cancer benefits.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very interesting point. And looking at, you know, I'm impressed by the numbers that about 40% are sexually active after such a amount of local treatments, and that's interesting to have numbers for that as well. I think that's a very
exactly, and I think that's, you know, like everything, biochemical recurrence is a very heterogeneous disease. You know, if you're going to operate on a 50-year-old who has bad disease, you know, they're going to be able to preserve their continence potency pretty well. They're now recurring. They're 52. They're 53. Maybe with some salvage radiation, they could still very well be active. You know, now they're in their mid-50s, you know, maybe they're remarried, younger wife, you know, and to say, well, for the rest of your life, give up sex because you're going to live a little bit longer, you know, 10, 20 years from now, even 8 years from now, not always an easy sell.
Good point. Thanks a lot for that, bringing that up. So just to summarize it for the listeners, so overall survival and metastasis-free survival was better for the combination. What about the secondary endpoints? What about skeletal related? You already gave us a little glance on that. Maybe you can be more specific on the secondary endpoints.
Yeah, I mean, the rates of all secondary outcomes, typically in that 50, 60% reduction. I don't have all the numbers off the top of my head, but time to next therapy, symptomatic skeletal events, something that's called PFS2, progression on the next therapy, with the idea of, well, if I give ADT now, I'll just give ENZA when they progress and I'll catch up and end up in the same place. And the answer is absolutely you don't. If you don't get it early, miss that window. Yes. I think that's one of the key messages. And so pretty much, again, almost everything we looked at, time to metastasis, time to castration resistance, all of it overwhelmingly favored the combination therapy.
Very good. When we speak about that, what always comes up, this was conventional imaging. And today, I mean, the clinical way when we see patients with biochemical recurrence following radical prostatectomy, we usually wait until a PSA of 0.2, and then we do a PSMA PET, which is usually paid in that situation, not for every patient, but usually it's paid. And we have the options. We just published a paper on EMBARK-like. You see, even our papers are kind of influenced by the study that you did, EMBARK-like patients, where we fulfilled the inclusion criteria and did radio-guided therapy in patients with a PSMA PET positive lymph node. What is your approach today when you have a patient coming with a PSA, might fit in your study inclusion criteria? What is the role of PSMA PET in your clinics?
Yeah, so we're pretty aggressive with PSMA imaging. And there was a nice study that looked at it, and there's been others, you know, about 85% of patients will have PSMA positive imaging if they're an EMBARK candidate per the trial. So the patient you mentioned, for example, you get a PSMA at 0.2. If we are strict, that patient would not have gotten an EMBARK yet because their PSA needed to be above 1.
Do you wait in such patients?
So that's the question. You know, so let's say we have a patient with a short doubling time, bad disease. We're worried. We think he qualifies for EMBARK, or we think he's going to benefit, but we see a PSMA avid lesion as well. So our options are radiate, EMBARK, or both. And I would say EMBARK is level one evidence of improved overall survival. Radiation is very little randomized data, mostly observational, some randomized data of delaying PSA progression. So one, I know works. I know EMBARK works. I think radiation works. I'm a believer. Don't get me wrong. I'm a believer. I'm very aggressive with the salvage radiation, PSMA directed, but it's a belief. It's a think. There's not level one evidence. So am I going to take a patient and deny them the level one evidence of an overall survival advantage for something I think is going to give them benefit? For me, no. So in the EMBARK patient, not all biochemical recurrence, again, short doubling time, higher PSAs, I will do both. I'll radiate what I can see and EMBARK. With the key, EMBARK is 9 months of therapy. I don't treat them like a MHSPC where it's lifelong. It's 9 months. I stop therapy. And hopefully, I can get much longer off-treatment cycles. Now, if the doubling time is 2 years and their PSA is 0.5, that's not an EMBARK patient. So does that patient need any systemic therapy? We don't know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of unanswered questions in this space. For particularly the young investigators who want to do research in here, we have a lot of unanswered questions.
Very good. Interesting. So you have these patients, those who don't fulfill the EMBARK inclusion criteria with a low PSA, you do the, you have something like an in-between thing that you, are you seeing patients, do you radiate? But yeah, they were included in EMBARK as well. You're right. Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing. EMBARK.
I must say, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
I think when you think about the study, and I'm really impressed about the design, when you think about the clinical scenarios, like I just brought up, you have thought about these things. And,
yeah.
And I really think that impressed me so much. I think this is a study that came obviously from a clinical standpoint, from the clinical needs. For me, they are the background for this study, and it was thought over, what are we doing with these low PSAs and so forth. Even though you don't have molecular imaging in there, we have kind of a solution, I would say, for these patients without excluding them from the EMBARK trial or the treatment.
Exactly, and that's the thing. I mean, I think to me, what EMBARK says, if we step back, is say, if I can identify a patient with lethal disease, when they are ready to start systemic therapy, combination is going to give them the best survival. So now my job is to identify who has lethal disease. And if you qualified for EMBARK, that's going to be lethal disease. Tim Daskovich, a researcher at Cedars, is doing some nice analysis that we can identify EMBARK-like patients that would not have qualified, that have similar risks if you get some other factors going in. So I think there's probably going to be someone similar to EMBARK that didn't quite qualify. But ultimately, those patients, when they're ready for systemic therapy, we now know how to do it.
Very good. Okay. Do you have, so I think, as you mentioned, like you have done the study, new questions arise. Do you have something in the pipeline that is, you think, similar to EMBARK, or what is your research interest in recurrent disease? Are you done with the EMBARK trial now? That's Stephen Friedland's work of life, so he can.
I'm too young to retire. So, I mean, one of the things, I mean, if you look at the overall survival, 40% reduction, and mind you, we started the study in 2014. The final ESMO readout was the end of 2015, 11 years. We're not going to repeat Embark. We're not going to be able to improve upon Embark realistically. To plan a triplet therapy to improve OS, no one's going to do a 12, 15-year study realistically. So where do we go and how do we improve upon Embark? To me, bringing in radiotherapy, bringing in PSMA-targeted therapies, bringing in lifestyle interventions that can extend that off-treatment cycle after 9 months to reduce side effects. Because even though quality of life is preserved, it doesn't mean there's no side effects. So how do we make the patient experience better, even if we're not going to necessarily improve overall survival? We're going to improve quality of life by some of these things, less treatment, even if we don't improve quantity of life.
Yeah, and I think one of the major points for me as well was that I think we change our thinking in how we deal with the medication, like giving a more intensive treatment at the beginning and then having an off-treatment phases. And I think Embark is a very good example for that. So this would be probably the way for the future, being more intensive in the beginning. What is your opinion on that?
No, 100% agreed. I do think there are, if you take it from other cancers, induction therapy, they often talk about induction chemo. So like an induction therapy and then off and then back on when you need. I think the other thing that we didn't talk as much about, and I want to give a lot of shout out to Bertrand Tombaugh kind of in my thinking about this, is monotherapy. And what we can conclude from Embark is monotherapy has some benefits, sexual activity we talked about, but is not as good cancer therapy as combination. So if you really have a patient that has really lethal disease and we're really worried they're going to die, short doubling time, in general, they probably need an aggressive combination therapy. But there are plenty of places where ADT is beneficial but good enough. We don't need to necessarily add a androgen receptor pathway inhibitor. And in those scenarios, intermediate risk undergoing radiation therapy, maybe lower end of high risk undergoing radiation therapy, where ADT is good, but has its side effects, could we substitute an RP monotherapy for ADT in that space? And again, still get better cancer control, not that we don't necessarily need it, but doing it for quality of life benefits. So I think there will be a role for RP monotherapy. I'm not sure high risk biochemical recurrence, if I look back 20 years from now or look forward, where is it going to be used? I'm not sure that is the ideal place, but maybe an intermediate or lower risk biochemical recurrence, intermediate to lower end high risk undergoing radiation. I think there will be a place for RP monotherapy.
Perfect. Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for summarizing your trial. We have a little tradition at the end of this podcast, which is that we would like you to ask to summarize in three sentences the key message of your trial.
The key message is patients with biochemical recurrence less than 9 months is lethal disease. We can reduce that aggressiveness and lethality by adding enzalutamide to ADT and maintain the quality of life. And it's just exciting to have new options for our patients to improve outcomes while preserving quality of life.
Thank you, Stephen. Perfect. Last question. Is it your first time in Hamburg, actually?
It is.
And we are very happy that you're here. Thanks for coming for this meeting. I think we will have a good time tomorrow together. You come with us to the operating rooms, and we enjoy your presence here. Thanks a lot.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.